There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile, live from Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway. 1 hour show today, following us at 1 o'clock, Scuttlebutt Radio Network. Show for veterans by veterans. That means Cal and Tom and the whole crew will be out here at Ed's. We're out here right now, and I'd love you to stop on by. I got some FM Talk 106.5 goodies, like I put the picture on Twitter earlier. At some point from now to 1 o'clock, a copy of the old Mobile trivia book. Give that away as well. I'll tell you this, too. I have a southbound view here from inside Ed's, and I am looking at the I-10 Bayway. Now, I can give you, now, traffic department, I know, has got Kane there. Traffic will probably update you on this. But just from my, you know, rank amateur, just a hobbyist traffic observer, I think it is slow going I-10 westbound on the Bayway. So it looks like eastbound is working okay. Usually it's the opposite, but right now I-10 westbound probably have some slowdowns associated with the tunnel is my best guess on this. But we'll talk about that through, because right now I'm in my traffic monitoring seat here at Ed Seafood Shed. Please come by and see us, because the causeway is moving great, and is the helicopter is out front. There's a helicopter sitting out front of Ed's. When you see, if you've never been here before, you see the helicopter, you know you're in the right place. So stop by and see us. All right. It's a lot to do this hour, so I want to get right to it and introduce to y'all a man that I'm about to ask questions about what's going on behind him, and that is State Senator Chris Elliott. And, hey, we're talking Bayway.
Yeah, we are.
And if there was a bridge, Chris...
If there were more lanes on that Bayway, you wouldn't have that problem. I'm actually seeing two, looks like Spanish Fort fire rescue folks out there right now, just before Mid Bay Bridge. So,
okay, so they're so it's not the whole way down. It's just at the
may not be in the tunnel.
This is this double team traffic here.
There you go.
As we start the show,
and we got the helicopter. So.
Yeah, so we can go up there and look at it as well.
That's right.
And we can do that while we enjoy our lunch at Ed's Seafood Shed. Good to have you back on the show, and lots to talk about. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely, glad to be back.
Real quickly, we'll talk just for a second. I-10 Mobile River Bridge, and we'll talk about the project. You had told me a couple months ago, said, Sean, there's dirt going to be moved, not just the ceremonial shovels. It'll actually be dirt moved in 2019.
It will be, and it may be mud, but yes, there will be mud. There will be
something's going to happen other than talking about it.
Correct, and that will happen. And I will tell you, there was a hiccup. A time earlier this month where I thought Sean is about to call me on this.
I was dialing you.
I know you were. And I was dialing Congressman Burns' office, who was able to step in, get USDOT, get FHWA back on track. Those are the federal highway folks. And back on track with their process to make sure this stays on track from a time frame standpoint.
So it's, of course, you know, this is, before we could even talk about the length of this project, we got to get it started.
Right.
You got to get started. I mean, all the talking about it, it's been year after year after year. Best estimates once they get moving, is this a 10-year deal? Is this a 5-year deal? What is it?
So here's the best part about this project is we are using other people's money to build this bridge. Mm-hmm. They're going to be real stingy with it, which means it's going to be lower cost.
Okay.
And it's going to be very efficient in the construction techniques and the time in which they use to construct it. Anybody that's built a new house, know you got a construction loan out there. Mm-hmm. You're paying interest on the loan. You're not living in the house. You're paying the mortgage. You're not even living in the thing yet. This is the same thing here. So the longer it takes them to build this thing, the more it costs them. And that risk is all on the private investor.
When you say them, you mean federal dollars? The federal portion or the state portion? Or
the concessionaire's portion. The investment that that is going to be made by the concessionaire. So
and it's what is it a 100? The concessionaire is going to carry all the risk.
You're talking about a $2 billion project. You're talking about probably $200 million from the feds. So $2 billion total, $200 million probably from the feds in the form of an infra grant. That is 10%.
Okay.
Okay, you're talking about some bonds through TIFIA and others at federal programs. I won't get into all the acronyms, but some bonding from the federal government. But that's all money that's got to be paid back. And then you're talking about private capital equity, mm-hmm. and this is dollars that they've got to go borrow in part. Some of it's their money, but there's opportunity cost for that money when it's sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
So the faster they can build this bridge. The cheaper they can build this bridge, the more money they make.
Good. And profit incentives are good because at least I understand how that works other than some of the workings of government.
And most business people will understand that as well. The faster you build it, the less cost of funds you have over time. So to answer your question, which I always do try to do directly.
Yes, you do.
4 to 5 years.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on it. But we're still on track for some kind of dirt, whether it be wet dirt in the form of mud or dirt being moved in 2019.
Correct.
All right. Lots to get to this hour. I want to talk about some of the things that you'll be dealing with when session starts at Fat Tuesday.
Yeah. I'm taking a bunch of king cakes up there. I'm just going to try to get off on the right foot and see how it goes.
But yeah, that's a tough thing. You got to spend Fat Tuesday in Montgomery. But is this something that is pre-filed? What is the actual term? Because you sent me something the other day, an op-ed you had written, and this is something, gosh, we have talked about, especially for the city of Mobile and Mobile County, and I know it probably has come up a lot in Baldwin County. Is this op-ed something that goes into being a piece of legislation you want to bring forward, or is this just a thought starter, a taxation without representation, police jurisdictions, and extraterritorial jurisdictions?
Correct. So that is an op-ed that refers to Senate Bill 23 that has been pre-filed with the state legislature already. So it is already there.
Okay.
It has been assigned to the...
It's a thing.
It's a thing. Okay. It is a thing, and the legislation is there, and everybody can go look at it online and read through it. In keeping with legislation that I like, it's about 1.5 pages of stuff, and then it crosses out stuff for the next 8 or 10 pages, which means less government, and we're moving in the right directions. But
right.
That's what this legislation does, and you're looking at it
now. Yeah, there's a lot of...
I mean, it's just crossing out all kinds of, in my mode, outdated laws that we need to move on from. So it is pre-filed and ready to go. It is something that we've been talking about in Mobile County. It's something we've been talking about in Baldwin County. It has been a tenant of the platform of the Alabama County Commission Association for some time. It has been talked about around this state for a long time. These are a combination of 43-year-old laws that really existed prior to counties having any authority to plan or zone or do anything like that outside outside of municipalities. And now the counties have the ability to do that and are doing that.
Okay, and this is, we're going to run to the break here, but this, when we come back, we're going to flesh this out. But it's basically a discussion of police jurisdiction, fire jurisdiction, those kind of things.
Correct.
And cities. All right, we're coming right back. State Senator Chris Elliott, our guest right here at Ed's Seafood Shed. I'd love for you to come on by and visit with us today. Be here till 1, and then the Scuttlebutt Network on at 1.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live at Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway. I'd love for you to stop on by and say hello. We're going to be out here, actually be out here till 2 o'clock. This show over at 1, Scuttlebutt Radio Network comes on at 1. But we'll be here hanging out. So I'd love to see you. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit, which is a fancy name for our van, out front here. So stop by. The helicopter has left. The helicopter on a trailer has left, but the van is still here. So everything's good, right?
That's correct.
Okay,
yep.
Helicopter's gone.
Van's still there. If the van leaves, you got problems.
That's right. It will be a big issue if we do. State Senator Chris Elliott, guest on Midday Mobile. And I'm talking about two things. I mean, it's an op-ed, but it's also a pre-filed Senate bill. Right?
Correct. And the bill, just to boil it down, we talk about in the op-ed and we talk about as a whole, is about taxation without representation. Right now...
You went Revolutionary War on
it. I did, man. I even quoted James Otis, from 1775, right before, and talking about the Stamp Act that the British imposed on the colonies in America. And listen, fundamentally, I'd like to start this conversation and end this conversation with one question, and that is it okay for people to tax, police, and enforce regulations against you when you can't vote for them.
Right, and I think most people would say no.
No.
But the problem is we've gotten this system where it's expected or not even thought of. And we look at police jurisdictions, people say, well, they're taxed at a lesser percentage than the people inside the municipality.
But they're still taxing you and you can't vote for them.
Correct.
And they're still regulating you and you can't vote for
them. How did we get here? I mean, has this always been part of the of how it's done, that municipalities have police jurisdictions outside their borders?
How did we get to elected officials or politicians that wanted power that exceeded their jurisdiction?
Okay. Right.
I mean, that's what politicians do, right?
But the problem is saying that the person can't vote for those taxes, they also can't vote for that person inside that, you know, they can't vote for that mayor, they can't vote for that city council member.
And therein lies the problem. We've got folks that are exercising authority outside of the people that have the ability to vote for them. That is fundamentally wrong and against everything our American political system is. And that's what started, you know, the Revolutionary War. And if you look at the end, you know, of that op-ed, I finish up with, if you don't like my Revolutionary War reference, it's real simple. Go back to everything I learned in kindergarten.
Right.
If it's not yours, don't touch it, and mind your own business.
Yep.
And I hate to oversimplify it, but it really
is. No, that one works. I use that one from time to time. Sit on your hands.
That's right. It really is just that simple. Now, you know, the police jurisdictions and the extraterritorial jurisdictions, I'm even getting tongue-tied about it, serve a purpose and did serve a purpose, but they don't serve that purpose anymore.
And that purpose was, you said, in the past, counties couldn't explain it to me.
In the past, counties didn't have the ability to issue planning and zoning regulations. They do now. In the past, you know, county police departments were really, they were sheriff's office, right? And all they did was maintain the county jail, and they had a couple patrol cars just in case there was a trouble out in the county. But that's changed. We have professional sheriff's offices that oftentimes are much better equipped than the municipal police forces. We have professional planning and zoning staff in the county. The whole impetus for these laws and regulations that are cumbersome and confusing and contradictory and overlapping now is gone. So why not do away with that?
Okay, law? I mean, but to play devil's advocate here, there's going to be people from a county perspective. I understand that not getting to vote for things, but, you know, if I'm there and I only have so many deputies, if I'm there and I only have so much time for planning and zoning or fire or something, it is nice to have a little bit of that on the fringes up against the municipalities being taken care of by some other entity.
Listen, this is not saying they can't get along. This is not saying they can't work together.
Right.
And our first responders have a great reputation and history of helping each other. It's out. They call them mutual aid agreements, right? You got a fire you can't handle, call somebody. They'll come help you.
Right.
The sheriff's office and the police forces in Baldwin County and all over the state cooperate all the time. There's the planning and zoning folks cooperate all the time. There's nothing to say that they can't continue to do that. There's nothing to say that they can't continue to work together. What this says, though, is if you're in the city, the city ordinances and the city rules apply to you, and you're here in the county, they simply don't.
Right.
And I don't know anything that could be clearer than that.
Okay. I would look at it from this perspective, that from a municipal level, it might be popular for people to say, hey, my taxes aren't going to cover anything outside the city limit.
It'd be very
right.
Popular.
I mean, that discussion's happened. Now, I know it's probably happened elsewhere, but I think Mobile, where I live, and the discussions of, you know, how much money is spent outside the actual city limits, enforcing police jurisdiction and those things. But I got to imagine that people in the county then have been, even though they didn't get to vote on it, they've been living kind of a dream because they get some of the police protection, but they don't carry full freight on the taxation.
They absolutely don't. So a couple quick arguments there, and they're all good. They're all good points. One, if you're a municipal leader, I don't know how in the world you justify to your electorate, the folks that actually vote for you, that you need to spend all of that money out in the police jurisdiction, out well beyond the municipal limits of your city. I don't know how you justify that. Oftentimes at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so not only are you spending that money, but you're spending it at a loss, at a significant loss. Mayor Stimson is a big supporter of this bill, and he said, listen, we're spending way more money than we're collecting. Then, on top of all of this, there is a requirement by state law that anything that is raised in that police jurisdiction be spent in that police jurisdiction. Some of the biggest opposition to this bill you're seeing is in those very small towns where they're making money off the police jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to get them in trouble, I think. And that's one of those things that we need to be very careful about and watch.
Okay, well, so this would look like, if this law is passed, then at that point, it doesn't mean there can't be mutual aid agreements and those things.
No.
It means that they would stop with regularity having police and fire in those areas. At the same time, they would stop collecting those taxes?
Correct. Yeah, so at the worst, it's revenue neutral.
Okay.
You stop providing the service, you stop collecting the taxes that you are required by law to spend there. At the worst, it's revenue neutral. And even those that are detractors, when you sit down and you really go, how much does this cost you? At the end of the day, this is very good for municipalities. Now, you know, I can give you some examples, too, on the planning side of things that I think are worth talking about. There are spots in Baldwin County where you are in the City of Fairhope's planning jurisdiction, where you have to get your building permit from the town of Silver Hill, where your property is unzoned in the county. Now, think about that for a second.
Because you're in the jurisdiction.
You're in this police jurisdiction. You're in this planning jurisdiction.
Do they line up? I feel so ignorant asking this, but they're not analogous from police jurisdiction to planning jurisdiction to...
They overlap, and the subdivision regulations and the zoning issues overlap, and then there's an additional court ruling that says that you shall enforce the stricter of the two. Can you imagine?
Well, that's subjective.
Oh, yeah, it is. And you end up with all kinds of problems. There's a lady down in Point Clear that was required to cut off 6 inches of her back deck. Now, for 6 inches,
what reason?
Because it violated some setback line that didn't exist in one jurisdiction but did exist in another. And she had been, and it had all been approved by the building official that had jurisdiction over it.
But they didn't really have jurisdiction.
They had jurisdiction over the building permit, but not the setbacks that were contained in the planning and zoning.
Okay. So,
do you see what I'm getting at?
I do see.
From a public standpoint, this is a nightmare practically just to live.
Okay. So would this be a motivator, though? Let me go back to my devil's advocacy here. Would this be a motivator for areas to incorporate into cities that right now are not?
Heck yeah. This is a great motivator. If you want to be in the city, you want to enjoy all of the things that a city has to offer. And cities are great places, okay? There's 13 municipalities in my district. There used to be 14, but I don't have Bay Minette anymore in the counties. But there's 13 municipalities in my district. They're great places to live. They're all unique.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they've all got their own little flavor and their own sense of place, and I think it's fantastic. And I think that people that want to be in a city should move into a city, should annex into the city. They should ask the city, say, hey, I want to be in the city. I want to be a part. I want to go to the library. I want to go to the ballpark. I want a sidewalk. I want a street light, and I want police protection, and I want a professional fire department. And if so, then you ought to pay for it. You ought to help that city pay for it, and you ought to not have to expect the folks that are in the city to fund you.
Well, and there's been look the exodus for Mobile on the west side. I've watched it, I grew up here, watched it, and watched the dealerships, car dealerships, big ticket items move further west, trying to stay outside city limits until they finally got outpaced there. I watched neighborhoods building, where people would have the benefit of being right there next to all the city stuff, but they're in the county and they have a little bit of reduced rate.
But they got all the services because they were in the jurisdiction.
Right. So
why buy
those
the cow when you can get the milk for free or for half rate of sales tax, I guess, is in this analogy.
Right. So, correct. It's never going to happen unless the system changes.
Exactly. And I think in addition to that, Mayor Sam Jones and I were at dinner the other night, and he pointed out most of the large-scale economic development opportunities that have happened, that have landed, have been in this police jurisdiction where they get all of the services, but they don't have to pay all the taxes. And I would submit that if the city supported things like this, they are going to need the fire protection. They're going to need the professional fire protection.
Right.
They're going to need the professional police protection. They're going to annex into the city. And all of a sudden, that municipality realizes all that additional revenue.
One of the issues, though, and here's a signed issue that's not quantifiable very easily, but just opinion, is often on, and like the city of Mobile, annexing in parts to the city becomes a political debate between the entities that are already in the city. You know, people say, oh, it changes the balance politically. It's going to make it voting for Democrats more, voting for Republicans more, which I want to point out, at a municipal level, there's not supposed to be Democrats and Republicans, but it is the real world. But they worry about that. So they're going to, this area is going to come in. This area is not going to come in. This area that doesn't vote itself in, or it's not, that the city's not interested in, is going to sit there without city services and not have much attention from the county itself. So,
okay, so I'll use an analogy. You got kids, I got kids. Just because somebody else has been feeding your children doesn't mean it's not still your responsibility to take care of your kids.
Good point. I hear the music here. We're going to the bottom of the hour. News break coming right back. State Senator Chris Elliott, our guest on Midday Mobile. Your calls and text at 343-0106. We'll get to them next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Great. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway. Traffic still moving slowly westbound on the Bayway as we have double-team traffic. State Senator Chris Elliott and I doing traffic duty here on a Wednesday. I'm glad you could stop in and talk with us. First of all, we're going through this. This is the op-ed version of what is the pre-filed bill. If somebody wants to look at this once again, whether it be they go to Yellowhammer News, I know, the op-ed, or what, is there some, like, some wonky place on state.gov or something to go look at the actual...
Her name is Allison. That is the Alabama Legislative Information System.
Okay.
So if you type in Allison and Alabama Legislature in Google, it'll get you there.
Okay.
And you're searching for pre-filed bills. This is 23.
Okay. And this would change the way it's been for 43 years.
43 years. And again, the mark of good legislation in my mind is it's got more stuff that it's crossing out than it's proposing. So we're right. Heading.
Basically, it would read that either you're in the city or you're not.
It's very simple.
Okay. Is that right? Is that
That is all there is to it. You're either in the city or you're not. You're either regulated by people, taxed by people, and policed by people who you can't vote for.
Right.
Or this bill passes, and all of a sudden, hey, guess what? You're actually living the American dream, and you get to vote for the people that have some impact
on
your
life. I have a feeling municipalities across the state would grow if this passes.
What's the incentive for them to grow if it doesn't pass? Right? Again, this is a disincentive for municipalities to grow. And that's why it's being supported by a lot of mayors. Now, there are a lot of smaller mayors, again, that look at this as a revenue issue, and I think there's some problems with that. Again,
in other words, they feel that the margin of the amount of services they offer in the jurisdiction it costs them less than what they bring in with that.
But I would like to point out, in that scenario, they are violating the state law. Now, I'm not suggesting...
Because you said the money has to be spent in the jurisdiction. But how do you... I mean, that one's even... I don't know how you quantify that, because if I have an officer, you know, and a police officer goes and does what needs to be done right then. So if there's a big thing going on inside the city limit, okay, that's where they are. Or there's extra officers have to go out into the jurisdiction, they can't say... Got knock off right now. I know we got this standoff going on, but you know, we're over our percentage of revenue.
Exactly, and it's difficult, and that's one of the reasons when the push came, and there was a push to quantify that, right, to figure out a way to audit that. I looked at it and I went, "This is silly. Let's just draw the line and say you're either in the city or you're not, and let's move on."
I wanted to ask, we're talking about things that you'll be dealing with in Montgomery starting on the 5th in session. The lotto is on the list, of course. The gas tax infrastructure issue is on the list. Also, the prisons issue. And I want to get to this just because it was, you know, I've been talking about it a couple weeks, and then there was a story from, I think, WSFA had a story, went up last night, about maybe putting into more certain terms what Governor Ivey would do, and this idea of entering into an agreement with private companies to build prisons for the state that the state would then, I guess, rent space at and put DOC people in there. Is that close to...
That's my understanding, and I haven't seen a specific proposal, only some news stories about it, but yes, it seems like it is some sort of public-private partnership that will move beyond, you know, what's currently going on and allow for some additional beds at new facilities across the state.
All right. So
to the tune of $800-900 million.
Yeah, so it's nice, and it was so when former Governor Bentley brought it up, it was 800. Yeah. Back then, actually it started at 500, then it quickly went to 800, and then somebody came back when they're trying to sell it and told us it was $350 million. I remember back then I said, y'all gotta tell me how this number jumps around. I'm just a old hayseed from South Alabama, but I'm trying to understand this. But now $900 million, which I'll go ahead and put the Sullivan factoring into it. It's a $1 billion project.
Of course, yeah, and I think that's probably without some debt numbers in it too. So yeah, it's $1 billion.
But it wouldn't. So it's not going to. It doesn't get bonded and go through the legislature because the appetite's not there to vote for it.
See, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that the appetite is not there to undergo this massive spending plan on prisons before we've explored other much more cost-effective solutions. I mean, you and I talked about it a little bit earlier. There's a 700-bed facility in Perry County right now that's empty.
Nobody is just sitting there.
No, and it's not owned by the state, but it was built by a private entity back during the Riley administration when we were doing some of this same type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's for sale right now. there's only really one buyer.
That's what I'm about to say. But, when you have a facility like that, you can probably name your own price because the chances are it's not going to become a mall.
Well, that's why you
it's
got.
It's not going to become.
You got about a $13 to $15 million price tag on a facility that costs $50 million to build.
Buy it.
Exactly. Now there's 700 right there off the top. There's 700 beds that are taken care of off the whole prison population.
Now, of course, that's going to require there's got to be corrections officers go there. I mean, we'll still have payroll.
We will. There's no question, and we'll need to do that. But we're going to have payroll. We're going to have to account for the payroll wherever at new facilities. Whether we're paying a per bed cost at a private facility run by a private person. I mean, here's the other idea. Whether we're housing DOC inmates at county facilities, and that's the things that I was really hoping would be looked at prior to embarking on a large spending plan. Where do we have beds right now? Where do we have additional jail beds at county jails? All over this county, we have excess. I mean, all over the state, we have excess capacity at county jails.
And then county jails will keep state prisoners, and they also keep federal prisoners to some degree. I know it's a varying amount, and it's they get paid.
They get paid
by the day or
that's
something.
That's it. Listen,
I think federal prisoners pay the most.
They do pay the most. Generally,
if I was a jailer, I'd be stocking up.
I want all the ICE guys. I want no question. And listen, the sheriffs are pretty smart guys. They look at it and they look at it any differently than hotel occupancy. Right. Okay. How do I fill these beds? Well, who needs a prison bed? Well, ICE needs them, right? Mm-hmm. DOC could do the same thing. And I think at that point, we could talk about absorbing probably another 500 to 700 prisoners around this state in currently unused. And all the state would have to do is pay for that, you know, the daily rate for that prisoner.
Have you had a chance to float this in Montgomery? I mean, have we had reaction from Jeff Dunn? I mean, have we had heard anybody from DOC?
So Jeff works for the governor. Yeah. I have not. I did see, sit through Commissioner Dunn's budget request, which opened my eyes. It was a large budget request. I'd like to talk to Commissioner Dunn about this, but I will tell you, in the legislature, there is significant opposition to this plan, and it is frustrating to a lot of legislators that we haven't necessarily got through looking at all the options.
Okay.
And I think, you know, the hammer...
And that's fair enough to say. You're saying that in the meantime, because, and I want to go back, and maybe we have to circle back again and again and again on this. People say, why do we want to build all these prisons to make people comfortable? It's not because people think it's a great idea. There's a chance of federal receivership.
Right. No question.
Right. But that's the motivating factor.
But spend $15 million in Perry County, done. At that point, the federal judge looks at this and says, y'all are moving in the right direction, pats us on the head, and says, keep going. At that point, we work out a deal with the sheriffs across the state to house DOC inmates, and you reduce the population, you know, ratio again. Okay.
How did we not know this?
Because I just got to Montgomery.
this could happen. This could happen. Y'all could money could be allocated. This could be done in this session, and this could happen in 2019.
It could. I mean, this is, listen, at the end of the day, I'm not the governor. The governor's the governor. Mm-hmm. The governor's got a really smart chief of staff in Congressman Bonner, who I absolutely love, and who this coastal Alabama ought to absolutely love. They are smart folks making smart decisions. Sometimes, if we put out another possible smart decision out mm-hmm. there, they can make that decision too. And I'd like to continue to have those conversations. Sean, at the end of the day, we're going to have more prisons in Alabama. I just think we absolutely ought to work through the low-hanging fruit first.
Fair enough. And we'll watch this, too, when it gets discussed, because it's really interesting to me. Just joining us, talking to State Senator Chris Elliott, and a couple things. We start off with the discussion of municipalities and what they provide outside in jurisdictions. But switching to a couple things you're looking at in session this year. Of course, we talk about prisons, but gas tax infrastructure, this thing is something that it came two sessions ago, I think it came up, and then, of course, it was quiet during 2018 election year. Now it's back. It's new quadrennium, and hey, y'all, how you going to do this?
So I'm thinking about having T-shirts made that say, I have not read the bill yet, and see how that goes over. I could sell them to other members of the legislature and make a tidy profit. I have not read the bill yet. Okay. I have read everything that Bill Poole, who will sponsor the bill in the House, has ever written.
Okay.
And I don't think he's going to reinvent the wheel on this. So I think that's probably a good idea to think that's where he's going to start. My concern is making sure, and this is nothing different than when we talked during the campaign, making sure that Baldwin County gets the best possible deal we can. Mm-hmm. That's my district, but that's coastal Alabama as a whole. There were 11 counties out of 67 in the state of Alabama that grew since 2010. Only five of them grew appreciably.
Wow.
They are Baldwin, Shelby, Limestone, Madison, and Lee.
Wow.
That is where the infrastructure needs in this county are.
Yeah. Well, you could argue that Shelby needs it, but it's just right there to Jefferson County.
It is.
Baldwin County needs it, but it's right here next to Mobile County.
Okay, so we can go back to 11.
Okay. I mean, you know, I'm just...
out of 67. Right. And listen, I'm a business guy, so I look for return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
The best way for Dallas and Marengo and Wilcox counties to get a bigger piece of the pie, I love pie analogies, mm-hmm. is to grow the pie. And you grow the pie by investing in those areas of the state that are kicking revenue. And Baldwin County is one of those areas. That's how you grow the pie. Shelby County is one of those areas. You get to the north end of the state, Madison and Limestone. That's where the pie gets bigger.
All right, coming right back. More with State Senator Chris Elliott, our guest right here on Midday Mobile. Come by and see us. Next person, walk on in. I've got a copy of the Old Mobile Trivia Book, Facts, Trivia, and Stories about Alabama's Port City. Next person, walk in here at Ed's. The book is yours, and I will see you right here. We'll be back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad you're here on this Wednesday. I want to check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins. And Angelo, even for procrastinators, it's about time to start thinking about Valentine's Day, because it's tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I figured for you and I, today is the planning stage. Planning on doing something tomorrow, because if we don't, we might as well not go home, right?
That is correct. So today would be like if we wanted to show ourselves to be on a new foot here. We're doing things right. We get started on the 13th with our Valentine's Day shopping. So what do you got? What should folks check out today at the shop?
Well, right now I've got to check and see if I've got any left. But diamond earrings have been a really, really hot topic today. So there's going to be a lot of really happy ladies out there tomorrow. We do have some nice diamond tennis bracelets. And we still actually have a couple engagement rings in stock. So if somebody has been really procrastinating and they need to pop that question, we can actually get them covered today.
You know what I like, too, is if when you come in, often I've come in and I'll give you a budget. Like anything I do, I have a budget. And you'll say, and I'll think, oh, I can buy this for that budget. You go, actually, you know, if you did this and this other item, instead of walking out with one of the small boxes that make women smile, I'll walk out with two or three.
Well, right, and something that you've been doing that I think is just an awesome idea. First of all, you give her a couple gifts, so she's very happy, and then you have a spare. So in a couple weeks, when you've done something that you probably shouldn't have, you can recover from that one real quickly.
That's right. That's the old sock drawer stash for a gift you can use down the road. All right, tell folks how they can come by and get that shopping done and see you at the shop.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can always check us out on Facebook, like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there, or check out the new website, mobilebaycoins.com.
Hey, thanks, Angelo, and I'll see you in probably 45 minutes or so.
See you in a bit.
All right, Angelo, checking in from Mobile Bay Coins. And we're live at Ed's Seafood Shed. It is Midday Mobile. We're going to wrap it up here at 1 in the Scuttlebutt Radio Network. Usually they're on at 8. They'll be on because of basketball. They're going to be on at 1 o'clock today. But we're going to be here hanging out at Ed's. So come by and say hello. Guest eating lunch with me, State Senator Chris Elliott, and lots of stuff going on. We're talking about, number one, this bill to change the way police jurisdictions, fire planning jurisdictions are done from municipalities to counties.
Right. We're getting rid of taxation without representation.
And so either you're in the city or you're not.
Very simple.
I mean, that's the Sullivanese of it. Either you're in the city or you're not. Right?
You're either in the city or you're not. If you're in the city, you pay city taxes and you pay for the services you receive. If you're outside the city, you don't pay city taxes. You're not subject to city ordinances and you don't pay those taxes.
You said that some of the pushback might come from mayors of smaller cities. What about counties?
Well, I mean, that's a good point, and I think Commissioner Hudson had made a comment in the media here recently. I will tell you, on a whole, this has been something that the Alabama Association of County Commissioners has made part of their legislative platform for years. I used to serve on their legislative committee. At the end of the day, the ACCA, the County Commission Association, gets that you ought to be able to vote for those people that are taxing, regulating you, and policing you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their responsibility as county commissioners. Will it be a cost to the county? It could be.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about that. But it's their responsibility. It is not okay to push this responsibility onto the cities. And I think also you will see that there are differences, and this is a good philosophical argument to have, and I think this legislation is doing just that, is prompting this argument. There are differences between living in the city and in the county.
Mm-hmm.
There just are.
There's pros and cons.
There are. And if you want to live in a city, most cities would be happy to have you. And as Mayor Tony Kennan, my good friend, says, I don't want anybody living in the city of Orange Beach who doesn't want to live in the city of Orange Beach.
Right.
He don't want to come grab you. He's not going to haul you kicking and screaming into the city of Orange Beach. If you want to annex in to the city of Orange Beach or the city of Mobile, you know, that's something you ought to explore doing. You just ought to pay your fair share of what it, you're seeing a theme here, of what it costs to provide those services.
All right, and I want to kind of wrap up with this. So session starts on the 5th of March. Y'all will be up there. Revenue issues here. You know, it's always about revenue. All these other things are swirling around the giant Jupiter that is some kind of revenue deficit we got going, right?
You know, it is, and I think it's important that we talk about a gas tax this mm-hmm. This session. It's been talked about time and time again. But I also say that we're talking about this at the height of revenues in the state of Alabama, right? So everybody talks about this horrible deficit we're in, but at the same time, we're not in a deficit. The ETF and general fund have more money they've had in the history of either fund. I think it's worth slowing down a little bit and talking about where these revenues go and where they're needed. We talked about that in the last segment, making sure that those revenues go where there is a good return on investment, and that is the way.
But with 93% earmarked budget, you know, you have this revenue stream that may increase, but it specifically has to go to this part of state government, even though that part of state government may be flush. Maybe its cup runneth over with revenue, and another one is so thirsty they're dying, you know.
And that will be a problem we continue to have, but we're going to take, you know, one bite at the apple at a time here.
All right. Very good. And you can see the op-ed over at yellowhammernews.com. And you said go check out Allison.
Allison, one L.
Okay. Allison, which is the Alabama government document, right?
It's the Alabama legislative information. It's where all the legislative bills go and the committee assignments, et cetera. And I'm really excited about this bill. It's gotten assigned to the Governmental Affairs Committee, which I'm the vice chair of. So I think it's got a good chance of getting out of committee.
Yes.
And got great statewide support already from mayors and commissioners alike, as well as from legislators from both houses that really like the idea of simplifying this, not just for police and fire, but for their citizens.
All right. I want to check back on this in early March with you.
Sounds good.
All right. Come by and say hello. Get some FM Talk 106.5 goodies when you stop in Ed's Seafood Shed. We're going to be here through 2 o'clock with the Scuttlebutt Radio Network. I'll just be eating lunch and watching them do radio. Come by and say hello.